This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I sometimes feel that I'm in some sort of either a dream or a nightmare. I'm not sure.
We stand to watch our agricultural economies and even our human habitation, some places, disappear.
You know, we don't want to be a dump site in western North Dakota, not on Fort Berthold and not in western North Dakota. We value our land, our connection to our land as tribal members.
Tonight and tomorrow, gas flares burn over the dry and drier lands of the western United States. There is a fracking boom exploding rock 10,000 feet down and miles all around. In Colorado, North Dakota, and Wyoming, villages become overnight towns. Big trucks fill small roads. Gas floats over the prairies and the foothills. The last waters in great rivers, reservoirs, and aquifers is poisoned. 50,000 years worth in 10 years. Billions of gallons a day. It kills the ground it touches or disappears forever into the subterranean earth. As climate change works against the browning landscape of the American West, crazed humans use all the water they can find to make still more methane and carbon dioxide, to make more money with oil and gas. We will go to those sacrifice zones. You will hear four voices. The ranchers and a Native American woman are part of an organization calling for regulations and safety protection instead of the enabling state, where fossil fuel companies control the capital, selling the dream of wealth to the people while their environment careens beyond reclamation. Farming may collapse in places, and without drinking water, some communities will eventually leave too. It's happening all over the world, the invasion of the well drillers, coming as close to 500 feet to homes, like it or not. Ask the disgusted people from Queensland, Australia, about the fracking blight, or coal seam gas, as they would say. Get ready, Britain, where the government sees fracking as salvation for the economy. Eastern Europe will be conquered and fracked. People all over North America and all over the world need to listen to our speakers today, because when it's gone, it's gone. Our guest is Wyoming rancher Robert Laresh. Hello, Bob, and welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Morning.
Well, before we get started and your statement of concerns about the explosion of fracking in the West, let's talk about your previous experience in the oil and gas industry. What was your role in Alaska?
Well, I had several, but the one that was most closely related to oil and gas industry was a cabinet office, Commissioner of Natural Resources, they called it, in Alaska. As commissioner, I was in charge of the oil and gas industry, hard rock mining, coal mining, forestry, geology, state parks, water. It was a very broad portfolio in Alaska.
And were you also part of the Exxon Valdez oil spill cleanup?
And then years after I was commissioner, I was in another cabinet post that was called Exxon Valdez oil spill coordinator. I was the one who dealt with Exxon during that event.
Right. And now you're a rancher in Wyoming. Can you tell us briefly about your ranch, Bob?
Well, my wife and I have a small ranch by Wyoming standards. We lease to someone who runs cattle, and we have 260 acres of irrigated hay fields. And my wife and I have a truck garden. We grow organic heirloom vegetables, and she has subscribers to her community-supported agriculture group.
That sounds really good to me. We are in favor of that on Radio EcoShock. Now, Bob, you're a board member of the watchdog group called the Powder River Resource Council, and you also speak for that larger group, WARC, the Western Organization of Resource Councils. Why don't we start with your concerns in your part of Wyoming?
We in Wyoming, we've already suffered 12 to 14 years of watching our water disappear into the maw of the energy industry. But we're afraid that what's coming next and has started to come will be even worse. Our coal bed methane industry, CBM, drilled over 26,000 wells in the last decade, mostly in the Powder River Basin in northern Wyoming, which is where our place is, actually. Today, many have been abandoned, and only a few wells are still producing, mostly because of the plunge in the value of methane. The water disaster that followed CBM was a bit different than that which is starting to accompany deep horizontal drilling and fracking. CBM occurs in shallow structures, 1,000 to 3,000 feet, which hold coal and water. To release the methane gas, aquifers must be dewatered and the water somehow disposed of. In 1992, the Wyoming State Engineer, our water czar, issued a determination that pumping out and discarding fresh water to facilitate CBM production was a, quote, beneficial use of the groundwater under Wyoming water law. From that point on, the state engineer's office has permitted pumping unlimited quantities of groundwater just to produce methane. From 1997 through 2012, a minimum of 309 billion gallons of water was pumped out, mostly being dumped on the ground. Very little was reinjected, and that which was dumped on the ground destroyed pastures, croplands, and agricultural soils. This manic discarding of our very limited freshwater resources over only a single decade has already compromised some very critical resources for some cities and towns. The northeastern Wyoming of Gillette, ironically loving to refer to themselves as the energy capital of Wyoming, saw its primary water source drop by 625 feet in only 10 years. This is a groundwater aquifer. The shallower Wasatch Aquifer, which overlies the main aquifer, was mined down more than 250 feet. Precipitation recharge of these reservoirs is approximately 0.15 inches a year. Simple math tells you that it'll be 50,000 years before the Fort Union Aquifer is back up to where it was in 1997. But things can get worse, and we're afraid that they are. 300 deep horizontal wells have already been drilled in the Powder River Basin since 2010, and 1,000 more are already permitted. Bureau of Land Management estimates at least 3,800 will be drilled in only two counties alone before 2022, with tens of thousands more to follow in other counties around the state. Each of these will likely be fracked several times and consume, pollute, and remove from the hydrologic cycle an average of 4 million gallons of fresh water each time a frack job occurs. And we don't even know how much water we have to meet this demand. Recently, our organization prepared a report which we presented to the governor and the legislature. And this report summarizes a 7-point plan which we've created, which the state must follow to prevent a disaster of water depletion. The 7 problems we define briefly are, first, the state has inadequate knowledge of aquifer water levels and water requirements for oil and gas drilling and fracturing. Second, inadequate use of groundwater control areas, which is a regulatory tool which we do have, which allows the state engineer to prioritize uses when inadequate water is available. Third, the management and disposal of contaminated fracking flowback water and produced water needs much better tracking and planning for disposal and maybe for salvage and reuse of water. Fourth, there's been very poor permitting and inspection of deep injection well disposal of contaminated flowback water, and this threatens potable aquifers nearby. Fifth, unplugged and properly plugged oil, gas, and uranium or exploratory boreholes, of which Wyoming has probably more than 100,000, provide conduits for potable aquifer contamination from reinjection wells and frack jobs. Six, commercial oil field waste disposal facilities pose risks to groundwater, land, and wildlife. And finally, seventh, we urgently need research to develop new methods for water reuse and recycling.
Thank you, Bob. It almost sounds like Wyoming and the whole part of the West there is being used like a sacrifice zone for the energy needs of the rest of the country. Do you ever get that feeling?
Well, we use the sacrifice zone language a lot. There are environmental organizations which fight for the, quote, special places and don't seem to give a damn what happens to the rest of us. So, that's a very apt characterization, I think.
Bob Laresh, looking at the umbrella group that you're also a member of, would you care to make a statement on behalf of the Western Organization of Resource Councils?
I made these remarks when we released our work report about the problem of consumption of water by fracking. This is a very important study, we think, and through it we're hoping to call attention to a serious problem that's growing in all of our dry western states. In a nutshell, the innovative oil and gas production methods that are resurrecting our oil and gas industry and have brought America to the brink of energy self-sufficiency, a good thing, also have a very dark side. They're threatening to suck us dry of our limited water resources. There's been a lot of debate over fracking and pollution, and continues to be. But little notice has been given to what in the long term may be an even more serious threat. Unless our states take real action soon, we stand to watch our agricultural economies and even our human habitation in some places disappear. 99% of rural Americans rely on groundwater for their domestic needs, of rural Americans, as do 51% of all Americans. The new production techniques that promise to provide us with so much crude oil and natural gas involve deep, 10,000 feet or so, horizontal, a mile or more, wellbores, and hydraulic fracturing. The fracking process requires lots of water. 3 million to 6 million gallons per frack job. These new production methods require up to 40 times as much water per frack job as did older methods. Tens of thousands of wells will be drilled, and each well will typically be fracked several times. Once these billions of gallons of water have been used for fracking, and this is a very important point, they are then removed from the hydrologic cycle, never to be available again for any other uses. Where will all this water come from? And what will we do when it's gone? This huge demand for pure water, a resource that's obviously essential to life and to our economies, and its destruction in the course of one-time petroleum production, is perhaps the ultimate example of externalization of costs. From where they should logically be charged, that is the oil and gas producers and consumers, to today's general public and to our children. When the oil and gas are exported with no surcharge for destruction of our water resources, this immense transfer of wealth becomes unbearable. Welcome to the third world. In the work region, four states, North Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, and Montana, have allowed industry to drain irreplaceable groundwater resources to fuel fracking for oil and gas with little to no oversight, record keeping, or meaningful regulation. In the midst of record drought and record demand for limited groundwater resources, this drain on the state's water supplies threatens other industries, agricultural production, and the livelihoods of families. States often don't even keep close track of how much water is being used by the oil and gas industry. Resulting water loss threatens the future of other industries, agriculture producers, and families. States must immediately inventory their water resources and calculate the best valid estimates of demand from the energy sector. They must regulate water use in ways that logically prioritize access to this most limited of resources and that provide for the future. And states must require that oil and gas companies significantly lower their water use. Good economic and human health require it. And good engineering should provide a method to make it happen.
So what is the name of that report, Bob, and where can people find it?
The name of the report is called Gone for Good, and it can be found on the WORC website, which is www.WORC, that's WRC.org.
Thank you. We've been talking with biologist, former Alaskan Energy Administrator, and now Wyoming rancher Bob Laresh. He's a member of the Powder River Basin Resource Council at powderriverbasin.org and of WORC at WORC.org. Thank you so much, Bob.
Okay.
This is the Radio EcoShock Fracking Special with our four citizen speakers from the fracking lands of the American West. I'm Alex Smith.
We feel like we're natives, you know, and that we belong. And all of a sudden, all these other strangers are coming to town and coming from all over.
A different lifestyle than what we were here before, with some farming and cows and stuff, and now it's an industrial type thing.
It's crazy out here. The towns are not prepared for the boom at all.
We're leaving because you can't live like this.
Jobs are plentiful, housing is scarce, and towns are bursting at the seams. This is the boom behind the Balkan.
This University of Montana Radio Television Department production.
63 degrees right now in the Williston area. Expecting the same thing for Saturday and Sunday. Middle to upper 50s next week.
You know, Williston was a peaceful town. And, you know, we took everything for granted. I guess we could get across town in 5 minutes. And now the change has come, and it brought on, it came drastic, or what should we say, it just happened.
This is Radio EcoShock with a special on the dangers of the fracking rush in the western United States. Next up is a longtime rancher along the Missouri River near Bainville, Montana. Pat Wilson's family has been there for over a century. Pat can tell us about the oil and gas rush in the famous Bakken Shale Field and draining huge volumes of water from the Missouri River. Pat, welcome.
Thanks, Alex. Yes, I'm a fourth generation, I guess, cattle rancher near Bainville, which is in the Montana portion of the Bakken Formation, a rather large oil-bearing formation spread out over North Dakota, Montana, Saskatchewan, maybe a little bit into South Dakota. It's a tight formation, which means that the oil is firmly tied to the rock and therefore has to be accessed by means of hydraulic fracturing.
Right, and you can't really see it on the surface. It's something that's under the ground, and that's where it is.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's about, I think around, in my area, it's around 9,000 feet under. In addition to hydrofracking, what is used is called directional drilling. Here, the spacing unit is 1,280 acres. They'll go down, make a slow bend, and make a lateral into the Bakken and drill about 2 miles, you know, laterally, and then hydrofrack it and then extract the petroleum.
Well, why don't you give us an overview of your concerns with that fracking boom and the Bakken development?
The primary concerns that I have is the enormous amount of water, of fresh water, that's used. And not only used, but once it's used, it's gone for good. In Montana, there's about 11,000 active oil and gas wells, of which about 800 are out of the Bakken Formation. In North Dakota, there's many more. I think they've so far drilled about 8,000 Bakken wells. Hydrofracking involves forcing water mixed with a variety of different materials and chemicals under the ground at extreme pressures. And as the wells get bigger and longer, like I said, 2 miles long, they consume, say, between 1 million and 5 million gallons of water per well, and we're talking thousands of wells. Now, we're in a very dry area, and we also are adjacent to the Missouri River, which is a primary source of water for hydrofracking. We only get about 10 to 14 inches of rainfall per year, and so we rely enormously on the aquifers and the streams that run into the Missouri as well as the Missouri itself. Now, the high demand is triggering a lot of things. The state agency in charge of water rights in my home state, Montana, the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, reported 13 illegal water depots just over the summer of 2012. Rather than reacting to that, instead of fining the entities illegally using water, they instead developed a bill that would allow for more water use for oil and gas. House Bill 37 was passed the last legislature and incentivizes the use of any excess water that current water rights holders are not using. In other words, water that was originally obtained for agricultural purposes can now be leased by the agricultural producer to the oil corporation for use in hydrofracking. In addition, more permits are coming. The agency's website says that 13 fracking water permit applications are currently pending in Roosevelt and Richland County. Over 70% of the requested volume slated to come from surface water. The industry argues that the amount of water actually being used still is a minimal percentage of the total available. Well, that may be true. I lived for a time in New Mexico, and I'm sure that same argument was made with great river systems like the Rio Grande and the Colorado until they are completely dewatered now, I think, by the time they reach the sea. The Army Corps of Engineers has plans to sell water to oil and gas companies from a number of reservoirs in Missouri, and I think we should be very concerned about this change. The organization I belong to, the Northern Plains Resource Council, notes another thing, and that there's no coordinated overview of water usage. Multiple agencies in Montana are responsible for different aspects of water law, and no single agency is addressing the cumulative water use by the oil and gas industry in Montana and its implications for state policy. Now, once this water is used, and I can't stress this enough, once the water is used for hydrofracking, a good deal of it flows back, and when it flows back, it's so impregnated with salt and chemicals that basically it's become a hazardous material. So after the water is used, it has to be taken to an injection well and pumped again thousands of feet under the surface just to get rid of it. So once the water is used, it is gone for good. It's taken out of the hydrologic cycle permanently. Now, what we're seeing is the tip of an iceberg because the companies assure us that, well, for example, they're planning 7 wells per 1,280-acre spacing unit in our area. So that would be like basically a 7-fold increase from what we have now. So there is a huge amount of water that could be at risk here.
The drought in the Midwest eased off in the spring of 2013 in places like Ohio, but it's still been very dry west of that. How long can this fracking industry drain away water resources before ranching or even human settlement becomes endangered?
I'm concerned about the, for example, House Bill 37 in Montana. I am very concerned about the precedent established there where we can start to divert water from agricultural uses over to the fracking industry, and especially if the drought locally in eastern Montana, two-thirds of eastern Montana is under a drought right now. Also, in addition to the Missouri, wells, dams, any kind of reservoir or live creek has been tapped for fracking, and that, I think, presents a concern, too.
Well, unlike many Western residents, Pat, you do own the mineral rights under your land, and you make some money from that oil. Why are you complaining now? What brought you to speak out?
It's true that we're making money short-term here in the Bakken area. I don't know if we have much choice because of things like forced pooling, which is like another story that I probably don't have time to go into. But fresh water, I think, is a commodity literally beyond price here. If we tamper too much with that incredibly precious resource, at the end of it, one fear would be that all we have is money, which you can't drink.
Pat Wilson, has your family experienced anything about the stress or pollution on a personal level?
Yes, we have. I'm not going to exaggerate it and say to a tremendous degree. We've had one oil spill on our place, which did, you know, briefly breach the containment area, was cleaned up. I think we pressured a little bit to have it cleaned up properly. There's been minor things along the way. A water tanker tipped over, and a small amount of salt water was spilled then. We've dodged a bullet several times. East of me, there was a significant salt water spill into a creek with, I think, something like well over 1 million gallons spilled there. This did not affect me directly, though.
And some big changes have come to that village of Bainville, Montana, the former population of 300. Do you want to talk to us briefly about that Alberta company, the trucks, the work camps, the subdivisions and all that?
Oh, I guess I could. Yes, a company called Procore essentially mines a kind of sand found in Wisconsin. which forms the basis for a substance called propant. It is the stuff that's mixed with water and forced through hydrofracking into the formations to sort of pry them open and keep them open. This company has set up in Bainville a huge depot offloading this sort of sand. It has transformed the face of this community almost completely. Our school system is pretty overwhelmed. Our sewer facilities are overwhelmed. We have two man camps now, one on the west side of town and one on the east side of town. There's talk for our tiny little village, which is sort of flabbergasting. They're talking of building a Marriott here. Some people project that our population will go from 300 to 5,000 people, which I think may be a little extreme. But judging from the increases I've seen over the last 2 years, it could be within the realm of possibility. Most infrastructures here are either overwhelmed completely or on the verge of coming unraveled.
Yeah, people don't talk about the social costs. I mean, you have a fairly tight-knit community. People know one another. Now suddenly there's strangers from all over the U.S., all over the world, coming for big money jobs on the short term. They're bringing their kids in and out of schools. It must be unsettling.
Well, it is unsettling for a native such as myself. I can spend an entire day in Bainville and not see a soul that I know. And that's a sort of wrenching experience.
Pat, do you think the Bakken Field is a bubble? And if so, what will be left for the next generation?
That's a good question. My son and I mull that one over extensively. It seems to me that Montana, sadly, is a resource-based economy. And built right into that, I think, is a boom or bust cycle. This is my own personal opinion, that sometimes things are ballyhooed to the skies in terms of production and sort of visions of a new El Dorado. I wonder if some of that isn't for the benefit of investors that the corporations are trying to sell on the idea of sticking a lot of money up here. Is it a bubble? I don't know for sure. I am profoundly uneasy about that.
Is there anything else you would like to add as we wrap up here?
If no one has ever seen a boom and all of the things that go along with the boom, it is unbelievable. I sometimes feel that I'm in some sort of either a dream or a nightmare. I'm not sure.
We've been talking with rancher Pat Wilson. His family has lived near Bainville, Montana for more than 100 years. Pat is a member of the Northern Plains Resource Council at northernplains.org. Pat, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We'll be right back with more voices from places invaded by thousands of fracking wells. Wyoming, Big Sky Country, is part of a sacrifice zone that helps heat our homes and power the barbecue cheap. North Dakota has been promised 7 times the wells that set the prairie on fire and set the climate on fire for centuries and longer. Stay tuned.